Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at WBEZ.org/events.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. It's noon on Friday, so you know what that means. No, I don't mean duck out of work early. I mean that it's time for the weekly news recap.
Fraternal Order of Police local president John Catanzara retired from CPD this morning.
The incendiary leader of Chicago's main police union says he's running for mayor.
We are at a precipice as far as this city is concerned. It's a tipping point.
Michael Johnston owns Shoebuzz and Lincoln Hall. He's facing a serious criminal case for allegedly taking an unauthorized video recording of his family's nanny and her friend.
Jurors weighing murder and other charges against Kyle Rittenhouse will return this morning.
Want the community to stay calm and peaceful. Whatever the verdict is going to be, we still want to remain peaceful out in the streets.
Lots to get into, and I'm going to need some help. So my panel today is Chicago Sun-Times columnist and ABC7 political analyst Laura Washington. Hey, Laura. Happy Friday.
Thanks. Great to be with you, as always.
Also with us, WBEZ criminal justice reporter Patrick Smith. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, Sasha.
All right, let's start with the story that everybody's talking about, the trial of 18-year-old Kyle Rittenhouse from Antioch. Now, we've just learned that the jury has reached a verdict in this case. Of course, no word yet on what that is. So let's work backwards a little bit here, Laura, while we wait for that information. You've been following the trial. Tell us your thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, I think that it's not surprising that it's taken 4 days of deliberations. It's a very complicated case involving, you know, multiple incidents and two deaths and another shooting. So I think it's to be expected. And I think the 4 days shows that the jury has been very deliberative and very careful in going over all the evidence, and they've made several requests. There seems to be, no matter what the verdict is, there may be a cloud hanging over it because there have been two motions by the defense calling for a mistrial because they feel that they were treated unfairly in terms of how some of the evidence was handled and how some of the questions was handled. But I think whatever the verdict is, I think we can be assured that the jury was very thoughtful and careful.
Jury deliberations took 4 days. Patrick, anything surprise you throughout these 2.5 weeks?
You know, I was surprised at how hard the judge was on the prosecution at certain times. That's not often what you see in a courtroom. Often, not that judges and prosecutors are always hand in hand, but I don't think you often see a judge being as tough and on prosecutors as the judge was in this case. Not saying that was right or wrong. That was one thing that surprised me. But I do think Laura is right. I think the fact that it's taken this long for the jury to deliberate is not surprising. It actually makes sense considering how complex the case was. I mean, there are, you know, dozens of pages of jury instructions in this. And I think Laura's right. You know, it doesn't mean people are going to agree with this. It doesn't mean that anybody has an obligation to agree with it, but I think it's fair to assume that the jury really took their time and you know, gave this thoughtful consideration, that this was not rushed. This wasn't something that was sort of predetermined by the jurors before they went into deliberations.
Well, as we wait to hear what this verdict is, I want to briefly look at some of the key moments from the trial. You know, there was Gage Grosskreutz, the lone survivor of the shooting in Kenosha, his testimony, and how he said he feared for his life from Rittenhouse. Kyle Rittenhouse himself taking the stand and the emotions on that day. And Judge Bruce Schrader dismissing that weapons possession charge. Laura, considering the cases that both the defense and the prosecution put forth here, tell us a bit more here on what you're thinking. What do you think the jury is struggling with?
Well, I think the jury is struggling with what was in the mind of Kyle Rittenhouse at the moment he fired those shots. I think it was very unusual and atypical for him to take the stand. Usually defense attorneys don't advise that. Obviously they felt and he felt that that he was well prepared and would be a good spokesperson for his point of view. The emotion he showed on the stand, I think that could cut either way. Some people believe it was a show, but even if it wasn't a show, it could be understood as being emotion, you know, in terms of concern for himself. You know, he was fearful of what might happen to him in this trial and fearful of where he found himself, as opposed to that he was afraid or frightened at the moment and was reflecting on that. I think the other interesting thing is that this judge, we've already discussed, is that he's kind of an unusual judge, and he's taken some unusual stands and positions. He has been, as Patrick says, he has been tough on the prosecution, which might set up some opportunities for an appeal. He allowed Kyle Rittenhouse to maybe the one to pick which jurors would serve on the officially serve on the jury, and, you know, pull the numbers, so to speak, which is something that apparently this judge does often, but it's not the typical thing you see in a courtroom. And he allowed yesterday to allow jurors to take home the jury instructions that he had submitted to them at the beginning of the deliberations, jury instructions that they had seen and had been able to review in the jurors' room during deliberations. He allowed them to take those home. And I think some experts are saying that might be questionable, because what did they do with those instructions when they took them home? Did they really obey the judge's policy of not speaking and not speaking to anyone else, not looking or out for any other information, doing other research behind it? Or did they use those instructions to augment their own deliberation? So right. we won't know right now, but I think those are just some really interesting aspects that stand out for me in the case.
Well, Patrick, last week the Chicago Police Department canceled some days off as they were bracing for this verdict and possible protests in response. Is that typical?
It has been typical under Superintendent David Brown. You know, this police department last summer really got caught unprepared with the protests and civil unrest around the police murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Since then, CPD has been really aggressive in adding manpower and canceling days off and extending shifts when they think there's a chance for protest and unrest. I'm not thinking of exact examples, but there have been times over the last year where they've canceled days off because they thought there might be mass protests and there really wasn't much of anything. I mean, police have complained about burnout because this is happening so often where they're canceling days off because they think something might happen.
What else do you think that we could see on the ground here in Chicago after the verdict is read?
That is a good question. Obviously, partially it will depend on what the verdict is. You know, we heard in the newscast that Wisconsin has its National Guard on standby. Here in Illinois, Governor Pritzker said the state is prepared for any unrest, but they won't be calling in the National Guard. I know people in and around Chicago are following this closely. I can't say, and I don't like to be in the prediction business, but I can't say that I'm sure there will be some response. I'm not expecting massive action in the Chicago area around this verdict, but obviously I could be wrong.
Well, Sasha, you know, I would agree with that because I haven't seen any. Usually when these issues are brewing or there's a verdict about to come in, you'll see some organizing. You'll see maybe some preliminary street protests. You'll be hearing mm-hmm. about people out in the street in the communities, community organizations who are starting to bring people together. And I've seen no evidence of that. And if you follow the reporting of what's going on in Kenosha, there are small groups of people on both sides of the issue gathering outside the courthouse every day. There have been a couple old scuffles, but nothing massive.
Laura, I'm going to interrupt you here. We just got the verdict not guilty of reckless homicide in Joseph Rosenbaum's death.
Wow.
That's what we have so far.
Yes, and I'm
watching Rittenhouse is breaking down in tears and almost collapsed.
Wow.
Not guilty.
Wow. Well, that absolutely shows, again, that they took this very seriously and
not guilty
methodical.
Not guilty on all charges.
Wow.
That's the update.
Wow.
Your thoughts, Patrick?
This is what I expected. I think the big question, you know, and Laura, I want to defer to you. You've been covering this trial much more closely. You know, I've been kind of reading your reporting and others, following other people's reporting as well, and watching the trial when possible. This is what I expected, just because, you know, it seemed like what was being set up is deciding what Rittenhouse did in the moments when he fired his gun versus all the decision making that led up to him being at at civil unrest with an AR-15. I'd love to hear Laura's thoughts on it, because she was following this more closely than I was.
Well, I'm not sure about that, but I didn't get up to Kenosha, but I think, again, going back to his testimony, I think clearly that probably was a crucial moment. He showed that he had, at least from the way he presented his testimony, he was afraid, that he felt he had no choice If you looked at, I mean, there was a lot of conversation about the video, but there were also videos showing him being pursued. And there was plenty of evidence that showed that, you know, someone threw a skateboard at him. Someone had a gun who was coming after him. So to a typical juror, that looks like someone who should be in fear. And mm-hmm. the other interesting thing that didn't come up was is what we talked about earlier, the lowest charge was dismissed, the charge of him carrying a gun. And that sort of symbolizes the other argument that people who felt he should be convicted would make, which is that he shouldn't have been there in the first place and that he provoked this. But clearly those arguments didn't sway with the jury.
What about that moment when they were asking for to view the video once again to see if he had been provoking the incident?
Folks, and of course, that video was very controversial
because
the prosecution is, because the defense is saying that they were not given the clearest, clearest example of the video before the jury began deliberations. But that video obviously was a big focus of the jury.
That Gage Grosskreutz moment, is that kind of where this all turned around?
What do you mean?
I feel like, well, you know, we had the lone survivor on the stand, mm-hmm. and there wasn't much hope after he spoke. It just felt like he sort of handed the defense the case.
Right,
all that talk
right.
about him having a gun, you know, all those things coming up much later. It felt like even if you thought that there was a glimmer of hope of, you know, Rittenhouse being found guilty, that just sort of helped the case instead of
sure.
Yeah,
sure. I think that was a major turning point. Again, you know, witnesses can work for the defense or for the prosecution, and they have to be considered credible. And I think he was considered credible by the jury.
Patrick, I'll ask you again what we were talking about a moment ago. You know, what do you think we could see on the ground here in the Chicago area?
Yeah, you know, I still, you know, as I said, my initial answer was it kind of depends what the verdict is. Now we know it's not guilty on all counts, which I think would be the verdict that would inspire the most sort of action in Chicago. I still, and again, we'll see what happens. I wouldn't predict massive action, massive protests in Chicago because of this. I'll say conversations I've had with people in Chicago, especially black and brown people in Chicago, is, you know, I was actually talking to somebody just yesterday, interviewing somebody just yesterday, talking about how, you know, he saw in the moments that Rittenhouse fired the gun that you could say that was self-defense, but that, and obviously the jury thought that it was self-defense, but that if you look at all the actions leading up to it, would the same sort of, would the same grace be given to a young black man or a black kid who showed up to a right-wing protest with a big gun? Would you then say, well, we have to look at just his actions in this one moment? So I think that's the conversations that I've been hearing from people in Chicago is about, wow, if you switch the race of Kyle Rittenhouse, this probably goes a lot differently. But as a question of law on whether or not in the moment, you know, the questions that were put to the jury of whether or not in that moment, was he acting in self-defense? Obviously, you know, they weren't looking at everything that he did. They were looking at the actual firing of the gun. And they obviously felt that he was, you know, in fear for his life, in fear for his safety when he shot.
If you're just tuning in, this is Reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is our weekly news recap where we look back at the week that was and we dissect the top stories that you might have missed, but you probably should know about. We are talking with our panel. Sun-Times columnist Laura Washington is with us, as well as WBEZ reporter Patrick Smith. And the news of the day, Kyle Rittenhouse found not guilty on all charges in the trial where he was out at the 2020 protest in Kenosha, Wisconsin. This was following the shooting of Jacob Blake by an officer, and Kyle Rittenhouse shot three men, killed two, and was just found today after 3.5 days of deliberation by a jury not guilty on all charges. Laura, what do you think is the future now for Kyle Rittenhouse? What does his future look like?
Well, it certainly looks. It looks like he will be. I'm sure he will be released from. You know, he will be released immediately. He will be free to go back to his family. As you know, he's been a cause celeb nationally with many people who are pro law enforcement, pro law and order. They feel that he was a hero, and that you know, and they believed his argument that he was there to protect property, to protect folks from rioters. So you will see him be played up, I think, by folks that feel that he was the victim of what we call wokeness in this country now, that he was the innocent victim of that. They will play this up as and make him a hero. Millions of dollars were raised on behalf of his defense to help defend him. So yeah, I think the future is bright for him, both as a individually and as someone who will be a national spokesperson for the issues that he cares about.
Yeah, he's so young. He was 17 then, 18 now. How much did that, you think, play into all of this, Patrick?
Well, I think that probably one of the main ways it played into it was him testifying and that emotional, that emotional display, him crying on the stand. As Laura talked about, there were some people like sort of from the outside who felt that that might have been an act, and maybe it was. And obviously, I don't know what the jury felt, but I think a young person, I know 18 is a young adult, but basically a kid up on the stand crying like that. I mean, really, really ugly crying up on the stand. I could see that having a real impact on the jurors, and maybe if you have a young person, it makes it easier to think of them as being afraid and acting in fear for their life and being vulnerable at the moment. I am interested to what Laura was talking about of him being a cause celeb for the right wing before his trial. I'm curious, it seemed that he was leaning into that before his trial, which made sense. It helped him raise money for his defense. I'll be curious to see if he sort of embraces his role, which I'm sure he will continue to have as sort of a hero for certain people in the country. If he embraces that and becomes a kind of media figure, which I think that route will be open to him now, or if he tries to put this behind him and go back to living a normal life, which presumably if he doesn't sort of embrace that, this will more or less go away within. I don't know how long, and I'm not saying this experience won't stay with him forever, but I'll be curious to see if he leans into being a political figure because of this or not.
I think what I'm going to be watching for almost immediately is who we hear from, public leaders, high-profile leaders, everyone from former President Donald Trump on down, who speaks up on his behalf and says this is, justice has been served, he's a great guy, and we embrace him, because that will – are we going to hear from the Proud Boys? Are we going to hear from some of the other very conservative right-wing folks that are out there that have been supporting him all along? And so that kind of messaging, I think, is going to be important. And I'm sure he's going to be, the talk shows are going to be dying to have him. How is he going to present himself? Mm-hmm. Is he going to present himself as this young, innocent man who is just happy to be able to move on? Or is he going to espouse a political perspective?
And when's the book coming out? That's what I'm wondering.
it's probably already with it. His agent is already probably trotting it around.
you've been following this so closely, Laura, from the beginning. Did you see this coming, though? A not guilty on all counts?
Well, I will tell you, I was expecting a mixed verdict. I was expecting that they would. They would probably be difficult for them. I thought it would be difficult for them to agree that he was threatened in every situation, that he was justified in every situation, so that they would, maybe go with one count or one instance, but not with the others. But clearly, the jury deliberated for 4 days, and it's like I said earlier, they obviously were very careful and very precise in terms of going over all the evidence. So, As the legal experts will tell you, you have to trust the jury to do the right thing, and you don't want to try to second guess the jury. So I guess I was wrong, and they were right.
What's the day after story on this, Patrick?
Well, I mean, here in Chicago, it will be about how did people react, and I'm watching for protests, but then also I'll be curious to see how everyday Chicagoans are feeling about this. Like I said, I'm not expecting mass protests, but people are following this. People anywhere I go reporting on other things, people are talking about this case, and I'll be curious to hear how people are thinking about this in our city.
I think that there's going to be the kind of conversation that Patrick raised earlier. around race and how race matters in these cases and how people of color are treated differently or perceived to be treated differently by the criminal justice system, there being a double standard. Again, as he described, the folks believing that if Kyle Rittenhouse had been black, there wouldn't have the case would have been shut down a long time ago. That African American defendants of color don't get the credibility, don't get the benefit of the doubt that white defendants do. And I think that's going to be the kind of conversation that you're going to hear, that the system is still not even and not level for people of color.
This is Reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. You are listening to our weekly news recap. Before the break, we talked about the top story of the week. That was the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse. Also, in the middle of our conversation, we learned that Kyle Rittenhouse has been found not guilty on all five counts, all charges in his trial. With me to break down the stories of the week are WBEZ criminal justice reporter Patrick Smith and Chicago Sun-Times columnist and ABC7 political analyst Laura Washington. Hey, Laura and Patrick.
Hey, hey, Sasha.
Lots happened. Very eventful recap this week, wouldn't you say?
fun when you can be in the middle of breaking news.
Absolutely.
I planned it this way.
Yes. Also with us, I believe we have Andrea Lyon with us as well, criminal defense lawyer. Hey, Andrea. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Hi, everybody.
So, hi, Andrea.
So let's start with you, Andrea. And I know you're short for time, Laura, so I'll make sure we get back to you before you've got to hit your deadline. But your thoughts as a criminal defense lawyer, lay it on us. Give us the legalese here.
Well, I don't know whether there's legalese. It is a surprising verdict in the sense that so many people were hurt and injured, and none of the charges were did they feel that it found beyond a reasonable doubt. And the self-defense claims, despite four shots in one of the victims, seemed to be enough. It is unusual for a jury to be out this long and acquit on everything, but not unheard of. It does happen. And it seems like some people must have been struggling with whether to convict him on something or not, or perhaps there were some holdouts. It's hard to tell. What strikes me as a criminal defense lawyer who is generally standing next to people of no considered not important, that is, people of color and poor people in the city of Chicago, what strikes me is that this, if Kyle Rittenhouse had been black, he'd be under the jail somewhere. He just would be. They would not accord him the presumption of innocence, because that's just how things are in our country, unfortunately. It is shocking in many ways, this verdict, and unsurprising in many others, given the political divide and the nature of the jury.
Well, Laura, I want your reaction to what Andrea just said. You know, and I'm also looking at tweets. I'm looking all over social media. I'm seeing a lot of folks saying, you know, the system is rigged. This is proof that the system is rigged. People making comparisons. They're saying, you know, Trayvon Martin, 17 years old, killed no one, murdered by a man that was hell-bent on being a vigilante. And Kyle Rittenhouse, 17 years old, killed two people trying to be a vigilante, found not guilty. And they're saying this is America.
Sure, and that's exactly what Andrea described so well. You know, I'm very curious to find out more about this jury. As I understand, the jury was predominantly white. There may have only been one person of color on the jury, and I think juries do matter, and I think the demographics of them do matter, which is one reason why there's so much work and time and strategy put into jury selection. And if the jury had been composed differently, you might have seen a different outcome. Again, as I mentioned earlier, white defendants are given the benefit of the doubt and given a level of credibility that black defendants or other defendants of color are just never offered. And I think that may have been what happened in this case. This jury related to Kyle Rittenhouse. He was one of them. They felt comfortable with who he was. And when they put themselves in his place, they believed him. And it's a harder thing for a white jury to do when the defendant is black and or maybe poor, as Andrea described, someone who they don't relate to and who is not part of their community, so to speak.
Laura Washington is a Sun-Times columnist. Laura, Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
We've still got WBEZ's Patrick Smith with us and Andrea Lyon, a criminal defense attorney and former public defender. Andrea, talk to us more about what's going through your mind here. I know it's only been a matter of minutes, believe it or not, and I know you're probably still processing this.
Well, I am still processing it. It is just a manifestation of a lot of the things that are just going on in our country as a general matter of the, this political divide. It's surprising to me, for example, that the federal government didn't charge Rittenhouse's mother with a gun charge for bringing him across state lines with a weapon that could be used in mass destruction. It's surprising to me that the gun charge was dismissed, although I'm not familiar. I understand the statute is confusing, and perhaps that's the reason. But it is surprising to me, and I feel a little uncomfortable because, you know, I'm a criminal defense lawyer, and generally speaking, we criminal defense lawyers celebrate acquittals.
But why are you not?
Feel that way. It's hard to feel that way because I am usually representing someone who is not accorded the kind of respect that this young man was accorded in Kenosha. It emphasizes for me just how racially skewed everything is in our country right now. I shouldn't say right now. It's always been like that. We just have times where it's more silent.
Yeah.
I'm curious, Andrea, having covered a few trials myself, I found some of the judge's demeanor and the way he acted not like completely shocking, but a bit out of the ordinary.
I wonder,
having been in a lot more trials yourself, what did you think of the way the judge acquitted himself? You know, there's been a lot of criticism of him, and I wonder if that criticism is fair or what you think.
Well, generally speaking, that's the other experience that most of us representing people charged with crimes have, which is that the judge is generally helping the prosecution if he or she is helping anybody, not the defense. And here it appears, and again, I'm looking from the outside, but it appears as though the judge was definitely batting for the defense and was angry, visibly angry, and tearing down the prosecution quite a bit. Usually I'm at the other end of that, for having the temerity to go to trial in the first place. And so it may have had an effect on the jury. It may have been a signal, or they may have interpreted as a signal that this is how they're going to vote. They ought to vote, or that's what the judge thinks. And juries do look up to judges a great deal. So if I have a judge who's making faces at me when I'm, getting up to cross-examine or something like that, I worry about it because I worry that the jury is going to interpret that as a reason not to listen to the questions and answers that I'm eliciting.
I wonder what you think as far as the evidence or maybe a particular testimony. What worked in Rittenhouse's favor, Andrea?
Well, what worked is the admission by the attempt victim, the surviving victim, that he, basically admitting that there were self-defense involved. I think that helped a great deal. It also helped that they were not allowed to refer to the people that were dead as victims and had to call them rioters or looters. That's what the judge said, which is very surprising. I cannot tell you how many times I've made a motion that in a self-defense case where I've asked that the deceased person not be referred to as a victim until the jury makes a decision as to who, if anyone, is a victim here. And that never gets granted. So that's quite surprising as well. It's very hard to know to what degree what appeared, and again, I'm looking from television and I didn't watch the entire trial, mm-hmm. but it appears to me that there were, that the defense had an ally on the bench. Let me put it like that.
Yeah. Interesting. 4 days, though, or 3.5 days for deliberation. Does that tell you anything? Or is that common?
It generally speaking, and this is you know, there are exceptions to every rule, but generally speaking, a long deliberation generally means a compromise verdict. That is that some jurors are at one end, some are at the other end, some are in the middle, and they're looking for common ground. It also may be that there were one or two people who wanted to convict him of something, and they had to get pressured into going along with the rest of everyone else. It's impossible to tell from the outside. I've done a number of jury investigations when I'm looking at possible juror misconduct in collateral, post-conviction or habeas, and it is not unheard of for there to be a couple of holdouts, usually, of course, in my situations, a couple of holdouts who want to acquit, who just simply get, you know, pushed, emotionally pushed by other people into signing a guilty verdict. I even had somebody pull a gun in a jury room, believe it or not.
Wow.
Get somebody to do that. Crazy things happen. So I'm not saying that is what happened, but I would be unsurprised if there were two or three people who thought he should be convicted of something and they got, you know, worn down.
Mm-hmm. This is Reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. If you're just joining us, we are discussing the verdict in the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse, which has just come down this hour. And that verdict is not guilty on all charges. A Kenosha jury reached the verdict just minutes ago in the case of Kyle Rittenhouse. They found the 18-year-old from Antioch, Illinois, not guilty in a shooting that killed two and injured another. Still with us is WBEZ criminal justice reporter Patrick Smith and criminal defense attorney Andrea Lyon. And joining us now is someone who's been watching this trial very closely. That's Clyde McLemore, who's the founder of the Lake County chapter of Black Lives Matter. Clyde, welcome to Reset.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Clyde. I will definitely come to you first here and check in. Your reaction to the verdict?
Right now, I'm in tears right now. I'm on my way up to Kenosha to keep everybody calm. I don't want to see the town destroyed, but I know that people are going to come out there and they're going to protest and they're going to be upset. This was a demonstration of white law against black law, because we all know had Kyle Rittenhouse had been a young black man, if he wouldn't have been killed just to stand trial, he would have been guilty on all counts.
Clyde, I was taking a look at social media here as this is all, you know, coming down. It's all happening so quickly. I was seeing comments from Jacob Blake's uncle, Justin Blake, just standing on the front steps of the courthouse, which he had been almost every day, and a reporter asked him before this verdict was read minutes ago how he's feeling. And he says, you know, Kyle's going to jail. I don't know for how long, but they're going to get him on something. Now I see that those same reporters are of course, talking to him now that Rittenhouse has been found not guilty on all counts. It makes me think of the Blake family, where this kind of all began.
Well, this is what I'm saying. Kenosha, Wisconsin is a sundown town. We have nobody to run for mayor. We have nobody run for state's attorney. We have the same people run this. It's a sundown town. And what is going on right now is demonstration to show America that racism is still out here. You know, A lot of this has got to do with, I really can't understand how he even got away with anything. A 17-year-old carrying a loaded gun. First of all, at 5 o'clock that evening on August 25th, I confronted Kyle Rittenhouse in front of, across the street from the school. Right there in Wisconsin law, you can't have a loaded weapon in front of a school, so many feet away from the school. He should have been charged for that, but they allowed him to do it. I always said that Kyle Rittenhouse was deputized
by their deputy
yeah.
to come there to that town. But nobody ever heard me say that or paid attention to what I said. But he was deputized because anytime you shoot somebody and then you go, you shoot somebody and then you walk and go all the way back to Antioch, Illinois,
yeah.
which is a 20, 30 minute drive from Kenosha. That right there lets you know that privilege was there. This is.
Hey, Patrick, the verdict, as we know, it's just come down moments ago. But have we heard from the families of the victims yet?
Yeah, you know, I saw some reporting that some of the families of the people who were shot were at the courthouse, you know, hugging and crying. But one family that was not there, the parents of Anthony Huber, one of the two people who were killed by Kyle Rittenhouse, they did not attend the trial. They said they couldn't bear to sit in the courtroom and repeatedly watch videos of their son being killed. But they said they watched the trial closely, and I'm looking at a statement from them here. Where they say they're heartbroken and angry by the decision. They also say today's verdict means there is no accountability for the person who murdered our son, that the verdict sends the unacceptable message that armed civilians can show up in any town, incite violence, and then use the danger they have created to justify shooting people in the street. Again, that's part of the statement from the parents of Anthony Huber, who was killed by Kyle Rittenhouse. They also said that their fight to hold Rittenhouse responsible is not over. They say Anthony is going to have his day in court. I'm sure that means a civil lawsuit is coming where they want to hold him at least financially responsible for the death of their son. That's what they're saying their next steps are. But expressing anger and sadness over the not guilty verdict today.
Andrea, what do you foresee there for that next step?
I mean, I would be unsurprised if they filed a civil lawsuit. You know, there's a lower standard of proof required in a civil case than there is in a criminal case. In a criminal case, they had once the defense of self-defense was raised, the prosecution had to rebut that beyond a reasonable doubt. In a civil case, the jury need only make a decision that it's more likely than not that he was not acting in self-defense and that it was, in fact, a homicide. And so, they may, in fact, be more successful with a civil jury should it get that far. So I would be unsurprised to hear that. And my computer is already blowing up with people getting angry at me for mentioning the issue of race and suggesting that race played any part in this. And
really?
I'm sorry.
What are they saying?
Angry, but they're just wrong. Well, that I'm biased and unprofessional was one of the words, and that it's unprintable. I can't say that part on the radio.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Andrea, the self-defense laws, you and I talked about that when you came on the program before, Wisconsin self-defense laws. Did they make it unlikely that the prosecution would get a conviction on the major charges?
The self-defense law, it's an affirmative defense. And so basically what that means is you're saying, yes, I shot him, but I had a good reason, and my good reason was self-defense, okay? And so once you raise that, then the burden shifts to the prosecution, and they have to show not only that you shot him, but that when you did so, you were not acting in self-defense. And that requires a human evaluation of the motivations of the person who did the shooting, of the behavior of the person who got shot, and it requires the state to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that what the defense is claiming is untrue. And mm-hmm. that can be difficult for prosecutors. But a lot has to do with how the jury feels about those who died and who's standing trial.
Yeah. Well, our thanks to WBEZ criminal justice reporter Patrick Smith, who's going to leave us now. We are, however, going to be joined by Stacey St. Clair, a Chicago Tribune reporter who's been following this from the beginning. She's on the scene in Kenosha. Hi, Stacey. Welcome to Reset.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
What is it looking like there?
So it's looking a little bit like I stepped in, you know, inside, so I'm not outside this exact moment, but it's looking a little bit like, you know, it's been for the past couple of days, with about as many or more journalists to protesters, and people mostly speaking calmly to reporters and amongst themselves.
So were you able to talk at all to family of Jacob Blake or family of any of the victims of Rittenhouse?
I have heard from the parents of Anthony Huber, who was fatally shot that night. He, on the video, he's the second man who is shot by Kyle Rittenhouse. And the family said that his parents said that this verdict cannot be what we have become as a society, that they want everyone to sort of stand together, that we don't become a community that just allows teenagers to take assault rifles into the community and impose their own sense of justice.
I'm just seeing now a statement from the family of Anthony Huber. It says that today's verdict means there is no accountability for the person who murdered our son. It sends the unacceptable message that armed civilians can show up in any town, incite violence, and then use the danger they have created to justify shooting people in the street. Your reaction
right.
to that?
Well, I think that's been the prosecution's case all along, is that Kyle Rittenhouse provoked the situation, he heightened the danger, and that somebody with more experience with a gun wouldn't have shot, as evidenced by the fact that none of the people he was with who were armed shot anyone that night.
Let's remind listeners here, Stacey, that the verdict in this Kyle Rittenhouse homicide trial was not guilty on all counts. Tell us what happened when that verdict was read.
Kyle Rittenhouse began sobbing, started to sort of lose his ability to stand, is what it appeared like. He sat down after the fifth count was read, the fifth acquittal was read, and his attorney just sort of started encouraging him to try to keep breathing and find a normal breath pattern. Just a few feet away, the families of Joseph Rosenbaum and Anthony Huber wept. I think they always knew it was an uphill battle. And I think they're, you know, from what they've told me over the past couple of days, this is sort of their worst fear realized.
Mm-hmm. What was the mood? I mean, it was 3.5 days of deliberating for jurors. What was the mood like on your end of things, right, from your perspective as reporters, just sort of waiting each day?
Yeah, so, I mean, the wait, everyone plays like a lot of like tea leaves, and the defense was actually getting very nervous. I spoke openly about it with me yesterday, that his lead defense attorney, Mark Richards, had never had a jury be out longer than 18 hours. This jury deliberated for almost 26. And so they were nervous. But I think once that jury came in and said they had reached a verdict on all counts, I think the defense felt like they were on strong footing, that was a good sign for them.
Yeah. And when they said that they'd reached a verdict on all counts, what were you thinking?
I thought pretty much it was going to be, I thought maybe there might be a compromise verdict in there. But I thought they probably had acquitted him on all five charges, because the gun charge was thrown out. The gun charge, I think, would have represented sort of the compromise charge, or many people thought would represent the compromise charge, was thrown out minutes before the case went to the jury.
Andrea, the prosecution had the burden of proof in this case. Did you see any major missteps in the last 2 weeks?
I mean, that's very hard to say. They certainly presented as complete a case from, you know, again, looking from the outside as they probably could have. And, you know, one of the things that a lot of people thought is, well, now that we have video, there won't be questions about what happened. But as you can see from looking at the videos, they are subject to interpretation. They do have some subjective analysis that occurs when you see them. It really is, you know, a matter of perspective. I think that I don't think they missed anything. I don't feel like they were prepared for the level of hostility that they got from the bench, and it also was to me quite shocking that they violated a United States Supreme Court precedent called Doyle versus Ohio, which does says that you may not ever mention anyone asserting their right to remain silent when the police question them, because people can draw a negative inference that you have something to hide, and they deliberately did that, which put them in the way of the judge's ire, and not for no reason.
Just about a minute left here, Clyde. Following this decision, how do you want to see the Black Lives Matter movement respond?
Well, that's why I'm headed to Kenosha. I'm just pulling up in Kenosha right now. And I'm here to demand that we keep it peaceful. I know that they're going to protest, and I know that I want them to keep it peaceful. I want their voices to be out. I know there's no more that we can do. However, I am personally getting ready to leave town.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be here because they're looking for a scapegoat. And if I'm in town, they're going to, you know, put me to it. So I'm just going to talk to some leaders, and then I'm going to see Jacob Blake, and then I'm headed out of here.
Stay safe. Stacey, real quick, what are you watching for as we continue to look at reaction to this?
I'm going to be, well, in the short term, I'm going to be watching for people antagonizing each other and goading each other into the physical skirmishes. There's been a few physical skirmishes since the celebrations began.
Yeah.
You know, in the long term, I'm looking to the civil suits that the families of Anthony Hubert's family has filed and that Gage Grosskreutz has filed, which basically is holding local law enforcement accountable for the actions that night. The lawsuits both allege that they essentially deputized Kyle Rittenhouse. So I'll be looking to see how those go forward.
And we will probably check back in with you. That's Stacey St. Clair from the Chicago Tribune. Also, Clyde McLemore, founder of the Lake County chapter of Black Lives Matter. And Andrea Lyon, criminal defense attorney. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That's it for the weekly news recap. And if you want to dive deep into the stories behind the headlines, make sure you hit the subscribe button for this podcast. Then take a few seconds to give us a rating and a review. Doing that helps people find us. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening and take care.
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.